Welcome to Off the Cut episode 108 for Tuesday, March 26, 2024. And it is our civic duty to continue to remind you that the worst podcast available on Apple and Spotify still is the Green Suitors podcast. But the best place to buy woodworking tools
is still KM Tools.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, baby.
Buy woodworkers for woodworkers. If it's nice. In their shop, it's in their shop. I know that they don't approve that specific language, but I like it because it's funny.
Not a bunch of hot garbage. All the stuff there, high quality, tested by them or made by Jonathan and his team himself.
How funny is that? That must be such a flex to say. It's like, in my store is either stuff that I've tested, and then the other 50% of it is stuff I just made myself. I couldn't find anything good enough. Yeah, I couldn't find anything good enough on the open market, so I just made my own. No biggie.
Just saying. Yeah. And the newest thing that they have coming out is the box joint jig, which makes box joints effortless, because if you've ever tried to make your own box joint jig yourself,
it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. Just buy Jonathan's. It's so much better.
Yeah, just
than anything you can ever make.
Yeah, just get it. Move on with your life. It's going to work flawlessly.
That's right. And focus on building the things, not the jigs.
Yes. Yeah. And if you want to get $50 off that or anything else that they sell, all you have to do is go over to patreon.com/offthecutpodcast and you are automatically entered to win a $50 gift card to KM Tools every single month if you sign up for any tier. Doesn't matter what tier it is, but the higher tier you are, the significantly higher chance you have of winning.
Yeah. Whew. And portion of every sale goes to the Katz Moses Woodworkers with Disabilities Fund.
Yes. Yes, you're absolutely right. Which, by the way, I saw that March Madness thing or whatever.
I saw that too.
Jonathan had to donate $6,000 towards the Disabilities Fund today. We're laughing because that's what an amazing punishment, right? Like it's great. It's fantastic.
I wonder if he knew, because I saw Derek actually sent the link when he first made that post. I think it was you, right, Derek?
I shared it at some point.
Yeah.
Oh, no, anyway. I didn't send it on Discord. No, that was somebody else.
Oh, somebody else did? Okay, sorry. I'm taking credit from else. Either way, he made that pledge when they had, 300 votes or something like that.
Right.
And so I guess in the time between when he made the pledge and when it closed out, it went from 300 to 6,000.
Hey, well, you know.
And that was Jason Grissom.
Oh, it was Jason Grissom. Yes, you're right. Sorry, Jason.
It is not the worst thing in the world to have to donate to an awesome fund like that.
So, no. Especially your own charity.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. It's a write-off.
It's a write-off, baby. It is a write-off, baby. Well, should we get into things? We got to have a tight show tonight because we've got the BYOC hangout with our patrons tonight.
That's very true. Yeah, let's get
into it. You mentioned the giveaway. When is the next giveaway so people can get ready for it? And we get people signed up before
first episode of April.
First episode of April. Next week.
April 2nd.
Next week or the week after.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depends on how you look at it.
Yeah. No, yeah, we'll do it on the April 2nd episode for sure.
Okay. Everybody, if you've been warned, if you've been debating becoming a patron, now's the time to do it. Yeah. Get in before the draw.
Not only you get, entered into win the $50 gift card, you get access to the Discord, behind the scenes stuff, you get after show, you get all kinds of stuff. You get to hang out with us every month on a live chat, tons of perks, and you support the show because
that's right.
It's not free to do a podcast.
But yeah. Bills keep coming in. It's kind of annoying. Hey, it is what it is.
It is what it is. Well, Zach, before we started recording, you were eating dead skin off your hand, and then I thought you were eating whatever you were working on in your lap. What do you got going on up there?
Just continuing the work on that server build that I was talking about last week. I've been 3D printing up a storm. I fixed my 3D printer, so I'm back up and running at full capacity. And I've basically been running these bad boys 24/7 because I'm doing quite large prints.
Okay.
I guess a point of that you can use to kind of wrap your head around is most the 3D printers work on plastic that comes in 1 kilogram spools. Yes. A lot of the prints I'm doing are close to 1 kilogram. So I'm using a spool per. Yeah, yeah. They're like 14 to 18 hour prints. Dang. Really dense. But yeah, I think, fingers crossed, I haven't assembled it all the way yet, but I think I just printed the last part. So I won't have to make any more adjustments. And I also made a jig for bending, because we talked about this last week. I want to veneer it in wood, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I made a jig specifically for bending it as well.
So okay.
We'll see how that goes.
I want to hear about all of these. First off, simple question. Mm-hmm. Maybe not a simple question. How did you end up fixing your printer? What went wrong, and what did you have to do to it?
So basically the tip got all clogged up and then the plastic backed up into, so there's this thing on the 3D printer called the hot end, and it's mm-hmm. exactly what it sounds like. It heats up and they push plastic through it. But it's covered in a silicone sock, so that that was my nickname in high school, by the way. they cover it in that silicone sock so that you don't burn your hand on it accidentally. But okay. for some reason, the tip of that silicone sock got all clogged up again. The jokes, they just write themselves. And then the
potential show title right there.
Yeah. The one where they clog up their silicone sock.
Yeah. Or wear silicone socks. I don't know. Anyway.
So that silicone sock got all plugged up with plastic, and then the plastic started backing up into the hot end and basically ruined the entire hot end assembly. It's just so caked in plastic that it was really annoying. So I just replaced the whole thing.
And so what was it like? Well, we talked about this a little bit last week. A new hot end, so like $30.
Yeah, $30-$40, something like that.
Okay. Not too bad.
Yeah, so not too bad. It's kind of considered a wear item. They do wear out over time, and this one was probably past due on replacement at any rate. So
you basically just took the hot end out, put a new one in, good to go?
Yeah, it's like probably remove a front panel, take out 3 electrical connectors, 2 screws, Bob's your uncle. Okay. So probably start to finish, probably like a 30-minute endeavor.
You didn't have a ton of like excess plastic just like all over the extruder or anything like that?
I think I would have had I not caught it as early as I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I was printing and I was here and I was like, why is my print not looking quite right? And then I stopped it almost immediately as soon as it started backing up. So
okay.
Got lucky in that regard.
So not a horribly difficult fix for that.
No, definitely not. It's kind of, it's part of general maintenance of your machine. It's, like changing a saw blade on a table saw or something like that.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Next question I have is, you're saying that you're printing out like whole kilogram, size pieces, which is not only expensive. So like everybody, a kilogram of filament, depending on what you buy, is $30, 20, yeah. 30 bucks, yeah. Depending on what it is.
Scott Walsh put me onto this cheaper stuff that's like $25 a roll. So
what is it?
It? What do you mean? The brand?
The brand.
It's called Elegoo, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been using the Overture stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems
I've used a lot of that stuff. Yeah, and I like that stuff.
No issues. It's not too expensive. It seems pretty, not budget bargain basement, but not super premium, but kind of like middle of the road.
Yeah, the stuff that the Elegoo stuff, you can get 4 kilograms of it for $75, and that's 75 Canadian too. Yeah. So,
okay, yeah. Well, I'll look into that next time I gotta buy some.
Prints well, I've had no complaints with it, so yeah,
okay. So, the question I want to ask is if you're printing off like whole kilogram size pieces, is did you run like scale models? Did you run it at like a 10% model to make sure all your pieces like fit and stuff like that before you?
No, you know what? So that's kind of the magic of Fusion is I've been pretty confident everything fits because I've got this pretty complex 3D model. That being said, I have printed it a couple times and yes, there have been some things that I've had to adjust, but I never actually went to the extent of doing a scale model, which is kind of an interesting concept. Maybe I'll try that in the future.
But then it's an interesting concept, but I also don't necessarily know if it's helpful because when you're dealing with pieces that need to, like, you know, fit together or whatnot, if you scale it down, now all of the individual layers of the filament are going to change. That's so true. It might skew how your pieces actually fit together.
Yeah. And the most challenging part about this whole project has been getting my 3D printed parts to line up with real world parts. So when we started the show, I was screwing this big fan to front shroud, right? So
there's what, 8-10 inch fan?
200 millimeters. So yeah, I guess that's like 8 inches, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So there's a screw mounting point in the corners around the fan. So basically I was just testing to make sure that I measured those screw points correctly so that I can screw to the front of my 3D printed part and into the fan to mount it there.
Okay.
So those are kind of the things where I'm printing things to double check, is to make sure that my screw holes on my 3D printed parts line up with their real world counterparts.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see this one come together, man.
Yeah, I'm hoping to go and do all the wood bending and stuff later this week. So that's now the most exciting part for me.
That's what I was going to ask next, is have you decided how you're going to tackle that? You mentioned you had some sort of form that you're going to use.
Yeah, so basically I printed a jig specifically for bending these pieces, and I got a big vacuum bag to suck it in. Okay. I still haven't decided what adhesive I'm going to use. So there are still some questions in my mind about how exactly I'm going to do this.
Do you have an adhesive that you're leaning towards?
I have enough material to do two attempts at this.
Okay.
So I'm thinking I'm going to do one with contact cement. And then if that doesn't work, and keep in mind, if it doesn't work, then I'm going to have to 3D print another thing. So it's going to be like another $60, $80 in plastic, but whatever.
I'm thinking it's a write-off.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to do one in contact adhesive and then one in epoxy and see which works best.
My concern, you decide what kind of epoxy you're going to use?
I realize I have a bunch of laminating epoxy from Ecopoxy that I used to make a skateboard deck back in the
day. Yeah.
I think I'm going to use that.
Okay.
My only concern with that, though, is that once I pull vacuum, it's going to squeeze out all the excess epoxy. And if there's too much, it's going to get on. Like, I'm worried about the epoxy getting on the wood and then staining it.
How thin a veneer are you using?
I don't know, what's wood veneer normally, like a 32nd?
Okay.
Pretty thin, so.
So yeah, so it'd be tough to sand that out.
Exactly. Basically, I don't think I could sand it out, really.
If you had it finished with, like, say, Rubio first,
that's a good point.
Would it stick to that, stain that?
Maybe
just
not.
Just the outside layer?
Or, like, shellac it or whatever.
Yeah. Maybe worth doing a sample piece on to test, like, different coatings to see whatever resists that epoxy slipping through.
Yeah. That's a good point.
That might be a good part of the video, too.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. Mm-hmm. You could use epoxy, and then if it does kind of stain the wood or whatever, after it's all veneered, you just do a light sand, and then you finish the wood with epoxy.
No, right. True.
Yes. That's also a very good point. Okay. This is why we talk things out on the show.
Yeah. I mean, you've got options. Like, if you, quote, fail, I don't think you're failing.
No. Then it just becomes a question of how am I going to rescue this, right?
Yeah.
Fail forward.
So I think what I'm going to try to do first is do the contact adhesive. Because that I don't think I will need to. So my plan is to heat up the veneer in like a water bath, pull vacuum on it, let it dry, release the vacuum, and then hopefully the wood kind of stays in the shape of.
Yeah,
right?
It has a rough semblance.
Yeah. So I'm thinking if it gets close enough, if I do contact adhesive, I might not need to then pull vacuum a second time. I might just be able to stick it on there like a you know, stick because it bonds instantly, right?
Yeah.
Whereas,
but it still needs the pressure, because remember that when you roll out laminate, you still have to like hit the J roller to like really jam it in there.
Yeah, for sure. But I think I could do that you know, I think I could do that without pulling vacuum.
Okay, okay.
But I think the epoxy, I would need to pull vacuum in order to get it compressed, because it's got to stay compressed for at least a couple hours while the epoxy cures, right?
Yeah. And what are you going to use for the for pulling the vacuum? Are you going to use one of those, like, hand pump wine pump things?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. It's surprisingly cheap, by the way. I got it off Amazon. I think so. It's one of it's actually for storing clothes. So it's one of these systems that, like, if you're going to put, like, clothes in your attic or in your basement for a year, you put them in these bags and then you pump out all the air and it sucks it out. So they're much more compact and they don't get stinky and whatever. But I think it cost me $18 for, like, five bags and a pump. Yeah, exactly.
It's not bad. You're not you're not worried about that bag, like, splitting on a sharp corner or anything?
I am slightly worried about that, to be honest. But I did a test run just without any wood veneer, and it was okay. It held, and it didn't seem too bad. So that made me feel a little bit better.
I've got some of those bags that we put, like, blankets and, like, quilts and stuff like that in.
Exactly. Same
idea. And they work fantastic, but then once you kind of open and close them, it doesn't seem like it holds its seal super well. So it's almost like you're going to treat this as probably a one-time use thing.
Oh, for sure. This is not going to be my vacuum bag that I go back to for years and years. I'm just going to use it once and probably toss it, as sad as that is to say.
I do want to get into vacuum pressing stuff. Like, it's so interesting.
Yeah, I've never done... Well, that's
a lot. Skateboard.
I did the skateboard, yeah. And it was a lot of fun to do that. So I want to try it again in a new way.
Yeah. Huh. I was going to say, a lot of people, if you end up using, like, an actual vacuum, like an automated one that pulls it and stuff, what people are concerned about, especially when they laminate with epoxy, is that it starts sucking the epoxy up the vacuum tube.
Yeah.
So people will put, like, basically their vacuum bag, run a tube, and then have this, like, catch container and then another tube to the vacuum, so as it sucks anything out, if there is excess epoxy glue or whatever adhesive you have, it will come out the tube and then fall in the little drip container,
which is like a dust extractor.
It's basically deputy. Think of it like the dust deputy of the cyclone thing, basically, is what it is.
I did some airbrushing for the first time a few weeks ago. And my airbrush had a little catch can on it in case any moisture got absorbed into the sprayer. So same idea, just a little catch on the side where any water could drip into.
Okay. What are you airbrushing?
It was one of the failed finishes on my Dreamcast project.
I was hoping he's going to say a van.
My hot rod. I wish.
I got a small ding in the side of the truck, so I decided to paint a mural on it. And it's Zach as an angel. Shirtless as an angel flying down the freeway.
I don't even know what to say to that. That's perfect as is.
Oh, that's too
good. One day I hope to own a vehicle with myself airbrushed on the side of it.
That would be wild. It'd be like you remember from, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, Pimp My Ride?
Oh yeah. Apparently most of those cars never even... Junk. Yeah, just complete junk. They didn't do any mechanical restoration to them. It was purely the cosmetic stuff, and that was it.
I remember there was one or two episodes where, like, they got the car, and it was, like, so bad that they're like, we have to buy them a new car.
And we literally can't even work on this one.
And it's like, if there were only a few episodes where they did that, can you imagine how bad the car had to have been for them to be like, you need a new car?
Yeah, these cars were rough. I remember watching that show and just being like, oh my God, I can't believe these people are driving around in some of these machines still. Can't be safe. But...
That's interesting. Funny. But I mean, they would do the silliest stuff to cars, and then they would be like, you like fish, so we put an aquarium in your back seat. You're like, where am I going to put my groceries? They're like, don't worry about that, man. You got an aquarium.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would be kind of fun to be on the show, but at the same time, they're taking your primary mode of transportation and making it completely unusable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
keep it for like months at a time too.
Yeah, I heard
that. Oh, yeah, how long
did they was keep like it? A year.
How yeah. long pimp my ride keep cars? It's 6 to 7 months.
Yeah.
And the yeah. show's participants had to find their own transportation while their cars were being upgraded with zero support from the network.
I've heard yep. that MTV back in the 2000s, and maybe still is, was just ridiculously cheap. Like, they wouldn't pay people anything. They wouldn't pay contestants anything. Like, they tried to make all their shows on a shoestring budget.
I believe it. Yeah. But, you know, like, Pimp My Ride, like, it was pretty damn ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
But do you know that you know for a fact if somebody made a show like that on YouTube, a channel like that on YouTube, it would be so damn popular?
I wonder.
Did you ever see that one they had on Discovery before Pit My Ride called like Monster Garage with Jesse James out of California?
Yeah,
they would take vehicles and just like turn them into the craziest things.
Wasn't
Monster
that
garage? Yeah,
I thought that was mostly. I thought he did motorcycles.
He but started like, with motor. I mean, he does motorcycles now, and he started with motorcycles. But they were doing a lot of cars and stuff in that show specifically.
Okay. Huh. Interesting. Huh. Wondering where he is right now. Maybe he's on YouTube.
They transformed.
I think he's still building
a PT cruiser into a wood chipper.
Yes. They did some crazy stuff.
Oh. But I mean, like, it seems ridiculous to have this kind of stuff on TV. Mm-hmm. But you know, this is the kind of crap that would do so well on YouTube.
I wonder why nobody's done it. Well, hold on. If I go on YouTube and I
see there's got to be somebody doing it.
Okay, Pimp My Ride knockoff.
I bet there's a Canadian version.
yeah, right.
Pimp My Ride, eh?
Righty. Something about a boat or something.
Huh. Mounting my ride.
I'm not seeing much, but it's tough to search Pimp My Ride without just getting a bunch of actual Pimp My Ride stuff.
Yeah. Ontario Overhaul.
Ontario Overhaul.
But yeah. You know what this also made me think? Don't you wish that you could go and just like, okay, so I don't know. What's the first show that came to mind? I don't even know if this show is still on. 2 and a Half Men.
Okay.
I don't know if that still runs. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why that show came to mind. I think it's a terrible show. But anyway.
Big Charlie Sheen fan.
Yeah. Anyway. Wouldn't you love to see like, okay, so, you know, season 2, episode 17 comes on. Don't you wish you could see stats on TV that's just like, oh, this episode has so many total views? I guarantee there's a lot of shows that don't even get thousands of views.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think 2 and a Half Men is probably a bad example of that because I bet they have higher views because I think that was a syndicated show. Like, I think in perpetuity. But some of these HGTV shows and stuff like I think their viewership is in maybe the hundreds of thousands.
Okay, so I just typed in CBS shows.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've never heard of this, and I'm sure you probably haven't either, a show called Fire Country. How many views do you think Fire Country gets?
Oh.
I'm going to say... just for fun, I'm going to say 50,000.
I don't have it. I can't answer that question.
3.9 million.
Oh, you found the...
Yeah, thing? Nielsen ratings.
So is that per episode or is that cumulative total?
So it says... I got to put it where I can read it. It says Fire Country Sunday special got 7,189... thousands of viewers, so whatever that equals out to be.
So 700,000 viewers.
Okay.
Well, I think that's
I didn't realize.
Do you know how much like effing money they put into that?
Oh, I know. The return has got to be ridiculously low. Like in terms of the cost per eyeball, it's got to be insane.
Yeah,
I'm, but sure, I'm sure each episode has got to be like $1 million to make, so they're paying like $1 an eyeball.
Yeah, I'm sure that running an ad on a TV channel is substantially more expensive.
There's too. 8 minutes of ad time that goes in every TV show, every 30-minute TV show. You talk about an hour-long show, like that one. Yeah, yeah. You're 16 minutes. And I would conservatively guess 200,000 a 30-second slot.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Easy.
I don't know. It just seems silly. Yeah. Like,
they should be giving that money to us. To us.
I genuinely have no interest in ever, like, having a TV show.
No, and it's... I think we talked about this at maybe Workbench Con, but my aunt was talking to me at Christmas time. She was like, "Oh, you liking YouTube? How's it going?" And she was like, "So what's your career path? Are you gonna eventually get your own HGTV show or something like that?" I was like, "Nah, no, thank you. I'm fine.
I don't need the extra work."
Yeah, right. That doesn't sound like fun to me.
Seems like a nightmare. I hear Jason talk about it over on the other pod. It sounds like a nightmare.
Oh, yeah, with his HGTV show.
Yeah. Not only is it not fun, but I don't know that it would be as lucrative, especially when you're first starting out. Maybe once you get into it for a little bit, it would be.
Yeah. Can you imagine how mind-numbing it would be to be like Pat Sajak and record the same damn game show over and over and over and over again?
Yeah.
I don't know. He gets paid pretty well.
True. True.
But it'd be mind numbing. Be like listening to the Green Suiters podcast available on Apple and Spotify. Oh, I know I texted you guys, but nobody else knows this. I infiltrated the Green Suiters podcast for their most recent update or episode.
How was that?
Snuck on.
It was good. They were getting mad today. They were getting mad that I kept trying to derail the conversation.
When's that coming out? When can people hear that?
It'll probably...
I think they release it on Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
To the patrons, and then it goes live on, like, goes to everybody on Monday.
Let's see. What's their Green Suiters? So they do it all on Monday?
Yeah. So well, they do the wide release on Monday, but they'll do a Patreon-only release on, like, Friday or Saturday.
Okay. Gotcha. So, yeah, so it'll be on episode... standby 131.
Okay.
Yeah, well, so Green Suiters 131, I'll be on there. And the best thing is they started recording at 5:30. And
Jason...
Yeah, Jason texted me. Because they're old. They got to go to bed early. Jason texted me in the morning. He's like, "Hey, join the podcast. I'm not going to tell Ronnie. And join just like without your camera on and sign in under guest." So Ronnie had no idea. He was like, "Why is there a guest joining the show right now?" He had no idea. It was pretty funny. We had a good time, though.
How long did it take him to figure out it was you?
About 30 seconds.
Okay. It's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. They're actually doing something. They're doing a podcast meetup with all of their listeners.
The Green Suiter Con.
Yeah. I was like, that's actually a pretty fun idea. They're doing a whole weekend in Cincinnati.
Didn't Keith and Jason do that at Workbench? I feel like they had like a separate little...
Yeah.
They met with their fans. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're doing an entire weekend. They're trying to one-up us.
Whoa.
So I was going to go down there and crash it because that's only like an hour and 45 minutes away.
Yeah, if I could make the drive and if it wasn't like a 14-hour drive or whatever, I'd be down to go check it out.
It's sometime in October. It's for Oktoberfest.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so. Got a little bit of time. Maybe I'll fly down. That'd be fun.
Yeah. It'd be fun just to razz them and, you know, just hang out with everybody and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. That's so I had that going on yesterday.
Yeah.
And so I told you how I was getting all excited. I got pumped about that. Let's just refer to it as the Helix table, the carve table that I wanted to work on, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I went and got all the did I tell you the story about the lumberyard?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. So I drive
No, I don't think he did. I don't think he did.
So I drive out to the lumberyard, the one I always go to, Allmendinger Sawmill.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's like 25 minutes away. Not super far, but also just not right down the street, right? Mm-hmm. So I drive out there, pick out all the lumber I want. It's just like this hole-in-the-wall barn. Like, it's the most non-professional-looking place in the world, right? Pick everything out, and then I, like, look around. I'm like, there's no one here.
Oh, for lumber.
Well, so then I'm like, I, like, poke my, you know, poke around or whatever. And I'm like, all right, I'll call him. I called him 10 times. No one answered the phone. Then I go, like, drive around the property because it's basically, like, there's a house and, like, several barns and stuff. There's no one on the damn property. So, dude, I drove all about here. I can't even get any lumber. Then I had to go, like, put it back and everything.
Oh, that sucks.
And I was like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to go to my, the like, you know, local woodworking store, pick up stuff. The walnut was one worse. It was like all sapwood, had just boatloads of knots. And I'm talking like knots the size of like tennis balls on them, dude. Like it was so bad. And it says it's pre-milled. It's like warped as all hell. And it was, instead of like $9 a board foot, it was like $16 a board foot or something like that.
Why is there always an inverse relationship between the price of wood and the quality of said wood? You know, like if you're going to buy oak or something at Home Depot, it's going to be crazy expensive and it's going to be the worst lumber you've ever seen in your life. But then you go to these small mills and it's like, oh, it's actually really nice and it's half the price somehow.
Right. It's because they're not transporting it all over the damn country.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably a factor.
They don't ship. They just cut it there and then they're like, we do not ship. We do not give volume discounts. Like it's on our property. That's what we have.
Yeah.
It is infuriating. I spent almost $600 on lumber for this stupid ass side table.
Well,
I mean, it's going to be fun, but I'm like, $600 in lumber for an end table? That's crazy. Yeah,
that's pretty cheeky. That's right off.
Did you see Jason's video on ordering wood through the mail?
I did because I was
paid like 20 something dollars a board foot for one of them.
No, one of them was like $30-something a board foot for white oak.
Wow.
That was insane. So,
to briefly summarize his video, Zach, he basically, you've heard of these like woodworker source and like Rockler and tons of other places that you can buy wood from online, right? He ordered from all of them. And the overwhelming result was do not buy wood online.
Were there any that were standouts that were good?
The most expensive one was the best.
Yeah, the most expensive one was the best, but it was like $35 a board foot for white oak.
Okay. So pretty crazy.
And they only ship you 4-quarter. So, and you can only get like pretty short lengths, what, like 4 or 5 feet long or something like that? Like,
yeah.
It wasn't great.
I think I remember looking on Amazon and you could get walnut wood on there. You can.
Just like little offcuts and stuff.
Yeah,
like cutting board kits, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 3/4 by 6 inch by 12 inch.
So maybe half a board foot.
What is it, $40?
$22. Yeah. So yeah, $40 a board foot.
I need to get in on that business.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, whatever. I'm just going to buy the damn lumber. I get it home. Let it sit in the shop for, you know, a couple days or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, all right, I'm going to, you know, glue it up in some panels and stuff. But I'm like, oh, well, I got to fill these knot holes. Dude, I have knot holes that are size of a damn tennis ball. And I was like, okay, well, I'll just cut those parts off.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm like, well, I still have to fill the other holes with epoxy. So I go inside, go get some epoxy. I don't have any like 2-to-1 epoxy, the stuff that cures in like 12 to 24 hours. Wow. All I have is the ultra deep pour epoxy that's like water that's going to take at least a week to cure. But really, you want to do it longer. so that like when you mill it, it's not gummy.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, I'm not waiting like 2 weeks before I mill this stuff.
Here's what I think you should do next time you're at Almendinger and there's nobody there. Just take the wood and then call them up later and be like, hey, I got this many board feet of walnut. Can you process my credit card over the phone?
They probably would.
Yeah, there you go.
I just like, I don't know. I would feel bad doing that. Unless somebody had told me like, oh yeah, you know, that's cool. Like and next time, just, yeah. you know, IOU or something like that. And that, dude, I would pay them a couple bucks extra. I'd be like, hey, you weren't here. I took it. Here's an extra 10.
Yeah. 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 It's that's a ballsy move to just leave your business completely unattended for.
I mean, I was there for like an hour picking out boards and stuff.
And you never saw another human, eh?
Not a single human. They got cameras in there too. So it's like, you would think somebody would be like, oh.
Yeah, customers.
And it was like a Wednesday. It wasn't like I went during lunchtime. It was like a Wednesday at like 9:30, 10 in the morning. I mean, I was at work during that time. I went on the weekend.
You were doing two jobs at the same time.
I was on a conference call.
Yeah, you were available for calls. You were working technically. Yeah.
But so now I just have these boards and I was like, well, I want them to cure faster. So I brought them inside. Now I just have a bunch of boards just sitting in the living room. Just like the epoxy is obviously hard now, but it's not like fully cured.
Yeah.
Cured.
Yeah.
So I just have a bunch of boards just sitting in the living room. Dude, I want to start on this so damn bad.
Well, you could maybe start, like, you could do like all the, I mean, what's the point? I was going to say you could do like all the pieces where there's no epoxy and then just do the epoxy.
But then you'd have to remill other wood, and I'd rather just mill it all at the same time.
Yeah, that's true. That sounds like a nightmare. That's why I stopped talking halfway through the sentence. I realized how dumb it was. It's like, oh, screw this.
I've been working on that, and then I started. I'm almost done making my first compilation YouTube video.
Ooh, I was thinking about doing that myself soon. Yeah. So how'd that go?
What are you compiling?
So people love shop projects, right?
Yep.
I'm going to do 9 shop projects that I've done. Compiled in one. It's just under 2 hours. I'm going to break it down into chapters for every single build. All of them have plans to go along with it.
Beauty.
And I'm kind of starting it off. It's going to start off with a new clip of me talking. It'll be like, you know, something along the lines of you as a woodworker, you can build anything. So if you look around the internet, you can find really interesting things that people create. And, you know, here's a collection of 9 of my favorite shop projects or something like that. And then I start playing an older video. And then after that video ends, obviously I've taken out ad reads and like whatever, stuff like that. After it ends, I have like a sentence or two where I kind of like end my thoughts on that one. And then I go like, I try to make it a cohesive. So like the first one, let's say I start off with like a table saw router table wing. Then I'm like, you know, that was a really good build, but one of the things you probably noticed is I didn't, you know, go after like the dust collection part. So the next best thing to do after you do that is start building and addressing the dust collection. And then I play that video. So you have like kind of a way to kind of make all of those the cohesive.
Yeah.
But the heavy lifting of making those videos has already been done. So,
yeah. So if you had to guess of this 2 hour video, how much is going to be new footage?
Oh, maybe 5 minutes.
Maybe 5 minutes. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So just really short little bumpers between each one. And did you find a way to successfully tie each video together?
Yeah.
Cool.
That was actually like, it sounds easy. Oh, you just throw 9 videos together and boom, you're done. I was like, no, I wanted to make it somewhat cohesive and flow between them. And make sense.
Yeah.
And I think I did it. Like, honestly, it took like half a day to come up with, okay, I should do this one here, this one here, and this one here. And I planned it out to have three of these so that if this one does well, I haven't blown all of my videos in 1 6-hour compilation video. I can do three roughly 2-hour long ones.
Gotcha. Oh, cool. That's an interesting idea. Yeah. I was thinking to do a compilation video of all my speaker builds.
Oh, yeah.
Because I probably got, I don't know, 4 or 5 of those. Yeah. So you get like 1.5 hours or something like that out of it. Right. And then I'll probably do my game console ones later, but I need to build up a couple more of those first.
Yeah. It's one of these things is I'm nervous to release it. I think I'm going to release it with no ad read.
Yeah,
I think that if it does awful, I can just make it unlisted.
Yeah. But everybody we talked to at Workbench said you also have to give it a little bit of time, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Those super long videos will start out slow and then they'll do better as time goes on.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to keep it with a pretty generic name, something of like 9 shop projects you have to build, or like 9 shop, you know, nine make shop, it pretty like
nine oh, shop, I projects, shop I, projects. 9 shop projects I regret not doing sooner.
Sure. Something like that. Something where it's very evident what this video is going to be about. Somebody goes, oh, 2 hours long. Pff, I'll pop that on.
Build my shop before I move out.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
What do you think I could do for the speaker one? Because I was thinking about this. Like, how do, you know, I was thinking about referencing the length of the thing. Like, you know, 2 hours of speaker building tips or, I don't know.
Like, or so, like, you know, four DIY speakers. Like, would you say they're levels? Like, one kind of easier?
Yeah, true.
You could say four levels of DIY speaker builds.
Yeah.
Your complete 9.1 surround system.
That's a good idea, Derek, but it's like there's a couple missing in there, so it wouldn't quite work. But I know. I wish
you have like a subwoofer?
Yeah.
Have you made a subwoofer yet?
I did, but I never made a video about it.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was pre my YouTube career. It was when I was just doing Instagram. Yeah.
Those are the funny times.
Yeah.
But no, I think you could absolutely do something with the speakers.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my question. When do you release a video like this?
I
feel like I should release it with, I should put out like a video that's like, oh man, that's a core Eric video. That's a core Zach video. Yeah. And then 5 to 7 days later, put this one out. So it's not like, oh, people have been waiting for Zach's new video for a month or two, and now you put out this?
That's what I would do as well. That's how I would play it. I wouldn't consider it like a, you know, a project unto itself. It's kind of like a bonus video or something.
Yeah.
So why not put out your core video and then watch the metrics on it, and you know your channel and how it performs. And when that video starts to have that drop off where you know it's no longer performing, then drop your new one.
Yeah.
Amy, yeah.
I've also considered releasing it of, Zach, you know this, the channel gets ebbs and flows of all of your videos tend to be performing a little bit lower, and then all of your videos start to perform better. Do you wait to release a video like that when things are going really well, or is that going to kill the progress that you're
having? I know, right? Like I when things are going well, I'm always like, I gotta bring the heat. Like that's the time to post your best videos, I feel
right.
And then when it's, you know, when you're in a little bit of a, I'd be more likely to do it, especially because this is kind of a long play. You know that this 2-hour video probably isn't going to get 1 million views in the first week. This is something that you
hope. It's going to be a 10 out of 10.
Something you hope slowly accumulates views over time. So I would intuitively say that you should post it in kind of a low point.
Okay. Interesting. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm saying talk to me more about your logic behind that.
Well, I feel like when you have momentum going, you kind of want to, like what Brad was saying, you kind of want to put your foot right on its throat and just when something's working for you, you want to keep doing it, keep doing it. So this is kind of a departure from what you would normally do, right? So it could be a little bit of, could be a little bit of a combo breaker. If somebody's like, I watched Eric's last five videos and they were all great. They were all, you know, 30 minutes right in the pocket of where I like it. And then this 2 hour one comes out. He's like, eh, I don't have 2 hours right now. So maybe the click through rate's a little lower and kind of breaks that trend for some people. Whereas when you're, you know, on a little bit of a downtrend, that's kind of your time to experiment and try new things. Cause you know, worst case scenario, it just doesn't do that well. And it's, I don't know, not that much of a detraction from the rest of the channel.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, the nice thing about not attaching a sponsor to a video like that is you can unlist it. And from the public's eye, the video never happened.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And I'm sure, what do you have invested in this video? Maybe
a day and a half.
Exactly. So it's, you know, it's something you'd be willing to risk if you axe it because it's not doing well, then it's like, okay, well, you just lost a day's worth of work. It's not like we've never lost a day's worth of work before in this business.
Yeah, it's not like you're working on a project for 2 months and the video got five views. Like,
yeah.
Oh, that'd be rough.
That'd be rough. Yeah. Yeah.
But
that's where your Raid Shadow Legends goes right there.
Uh-huh. Dude, I got pitched to Raid Shadow Legends.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think I can do it.
No.
I don't think I can
What's your objection to it? I mean, to me, it's just like, it's like any other video game, I guess.
I know, but it's like, it is so, like, whenever, I remember even before starting this, like, I would see ads, everyone, you know, Squarespace, life insurance, whatever. Yeah. I was like, yeah, who cares? And then people would Raid Shadow Legends. You gotta be fucking kidding.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like,
you
really? Definitely,
you see it and you're like, yeah. They're just, they're not playing it. They're just getting the paycheck.
Right.
Oh, totally. Oh, that's
implicit too. But,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's fair, but I mean, I don't know. I feel like there are obviously sponsors that you do just for the money. And I feel like, I guess maybe that's just my perspective as a YouTube creator. Like, I see other creators doing spots and I'm just like, of course they don't really care. Like, it's just a gig, right?
Right. It'd be like, would you do a makeup ad?
Right. Right. I mean, maybe, but... Everybody's got their
number, right? Check.
Holiday time is coming up. One of the things I'm getting for Sophie is I don't even know a makeup brand.
I remember some creators talking about there was some company that was shopping around I can't remember, it was like some sort of like device that you rubbed on your face and there was like an electrical charge or something.
It's like a massage bristly thing or whatever.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And they were handing out fat paychecks, apparently.
I'm pretty sure that's one that was pitched this week through our agent.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't checked that out.
Called Foreo. Foreo.
Foreo. Let's see. Yeah, I think this is it.
Is that what it is?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, it's like a face massager cleaner thing.
Obviously, like a product aimed at women too, by the way. I'm looking at their website and there's not a man on it. But for some reason, they were approaching woodworking content creators.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, would that be my first choice of sponsor? No. But if they drove a big enough dump truck full of money to my front door, like... Everybody's got their price.
Sure. Well, speaking of videos, I saw something that I took when we were at WorkbenchCon. People were talking about that. I'm going to say the wrong name, so correct me. Alex and Samir, is that it?
Oh,
David and Samir.
Colin and Samir.
Colin and Samir. Thank you.
Yes.
It's a newsletter and a media company run by people. It's all about like the creator economy. So I subscribe to their newsletter just to be on the up and up of just things that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that they shared in one of their most recent newsletters is a new AI program that, dude, I love this.
Okay.
So you know how a lot of us will text each other and be like, hey, I got this video. Help me brainstorm ideas of titles and stuff like that. Brainstorming. Yeah. All right. It is called Title Exploder.
Title Exploder.
And what you do is you basically put in like the title of your video, and then you could do a description. And then it kind of makes like this like tree splits off of like here are like 5 to 10 titles. Now, maybe you like one, but you want it to remix that one. Or you're like, no, tell me like a negative form of this title or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it basically does all of this brainstorming for you. Some of them are really generic and like, I would never put that on. But it makes you go, oh, never thought of that. It's free too. I signed up for it yesterday.
I just searched for it, but I can't find it.
Okay.
Yeah,
I searched Title Exploder and I...
Hold on. I'll send it in the private chat here.
Okay.
It says it's a waitlist thing. So, I think it's only available to people if you have over 150,000 subs or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
On YouTube.
Are you sure it's not called Spotter?
It is.
Title Exploder.
Title Exploder by Spotter.
Okay. So Spotter is a... Yeah, okay, interesting. So it's like a subtool of interesting.
Yeah, it's super, super interesting.
Very cool.
I think it's a tool that I'm going to use, especially when I'm doing A/B testing on videos. Like, just give me ideas. Get my brain churning and see what other sort of options I have. But it's a neat tool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just started kind of diving into that yesterday, and I don't know. It's neat.
Yeah, I'm all about... So I have a friend who works in copywriting and advertising. So basically his job is to write scripts and, you know, like type punchlines for businesses and stuff like that. And he was saying to me that he uses ChatGPT and other voice or text with natural language model.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways. Yeah. He has like a conversation with it. So he'll say like, what does this like demographic care about? Like my target audience is women age 18 to 35. What are like five key concerns of that group? And then like, you know, ChatGPT will list out five things. And then he'll say like, okay, well, of those three things, like what, you know, of those five things, how are they all linked together? What's a common trait about those? And blah, blah, blah. So he has like a conversation with it, and he finds that that's a good way to brainstorm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need to bounce ideas off people because, like, you come up with a title and then you're like so entrenched in it that you're like changing one word. It's like, no. It doesn't matter if you say best or greatest, it's more of the specific word is irrelevant. It's the thought that the title is carrying. And sometimes it's really challenging to branch out beyond the one initial thought that you have. Likewise with a project. Sometimes you think this is how I'm going to have to build this project. And it isn't until you brainstorm like the veneering your server.
Yeah.
That you come up with different ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. I think it's a program I need to explore more. I need to explore more AI in general.
Yeah, I think that's one thing I think we all took away from Workbench is there's a lot of potential for AI for us content creators. So I think the more ways, you know, you try things out. If they stick, they stick. And if they don't, they don't. But they're tools, and it'd be foolish of you to, like, you know, at least not take a look at them.
I think my biggest issue is I was talking to Derek. I'm not educating myself on them. So like, I don't know where to, like Derek, I don't know where to go. So Derek was like, oh yeah, you know, I did these auto-generated images. I'm like, dude, I don't even know like what website do I go to find this?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's no different than being like, oh, you got to use Spotify to listen to music, or, oh, you got to use Apple Music. Somebody has to tell you, you still have to go out and search that package of where the information is. It's not just magically going to show up.
Well, to me, it's kind of reminiscent of the early days of the internet, because do you remember when we were younger, people be like, oh, have you heard about this website that has all the music in the world on it? And you're like, no, I haven't. They're like, oh, it's Napster. You got to check it out. Yeah. And you're like, And it's like, it's just these, like, it's, there's, the change is so rapid at this point that the information right. needs, like, it still needs time to spread out and get out there. So
that's fair. Or like, I mean, sometimes you'll talk to like your parents or like your parents' friends or whatever.
Yeah.
Something that seems so basic and trivial to you about like, oh, you need to go to that restaurant. Yeah. Just type the restaurant in online and then press the little arrow that how's direction. Yeah. Whereas like your parents might like go online and be like directions, click yes. on directions, then yeah. type in the restaurant name and then like print it out. It's like, they're yeah. getting the same place, but it's, they haven't yeah. taught, they haven't been taught how to be efficient with what they're doing.
Yeah.
Their okay. process hasn't updated.
Yeah. Right. And that's one thing I don't want to become the person who hasn't updated their processes.
It's going to happen to you sooner or later.
Mm-hmm. No, dude, that's why I got a 3D printer.
Right. Yeah, totally. And I resisted getting a 3D printer for a long time, even though I'm a big dork and it's kind of like right up my alley. Right. I was like, yeah, you know what? Other people are in that space already. Like I'm late to the party or whatever.
Right.
And then I was like, what am I saying? Like, no, I should be, I should be all over this. And then, yeah, it's been great. I've really enjoyed it. Yeah. So I assume AI will be much the same way.
You and I have no interest in cranking out thousands of 3D printed parts, but I still want to understand how to use a 3D printer, how to leverage it, how to rapidly prototype ideas that I have.
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't know. I think AI is the same. I need to do better at maybe watching some YouTube creators talk about AI and how to leverage it and not a bunch of clickbaity stuff you see on like Instagram that's like, oh, did you know AI can do this for you? And somebody is like, make me a potato. And then like, they're like, look, AI created a whole dinner. It's like, no, like give me an actual, like real world example, like this title thing. I'm like, okay, that's super approachable. I type in a title. It gives me ideas. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not a magic button. It's a tool to leverage.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know. Have you seen any other good AI ones recently that you are interested in?
No, I haven't. I don't think anyways. Oh, actually, no, that's not true. I saw one. This is kind of like a niche one. Okay. But it's called Vectorize, I think. And basically, it'll take any image. So a problem I run into a problem I run into all the time is I'll find an image online and I'll want to use it for a project. So like... I was working on my Nintendo Switch project recently, and I wanted the logo from the Nintendo Switch, but all I could find was these low-resolution JPEGs of it.
Yeah.
So I took this image, and I threw it into this vectorized thing, and it created a vector from the JPEG. And for people who don't know, a vector is an image file that you can scale up or down
infinitely,
yeah, and you never lose resolution. So it happens to me all the time. I'll need just like an image or I'll need an image for a video and it'll be really small. And by the time I scale it up to 4K, it ends up looking like garbage.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. So this vectorized thing has been really good for that. And another one I found is called Runway AI.
Okay.
And what you can do is input a still image into it and it will then give you a video file out the other side. So it'll find some way, and it's different with it's random every time. It'll find some way to animate that picture.
So this example is on their website is somebody is in New York City and you're looking down a road, you snap a photo.
Yeah.
Now this has transformed it as if you're like walking down the street at a very slow pace. It's kind of like a cinematic shot.
Yeah, it's like that's great
for nuts, man.
Yeah, I used it for one of my videos recently where I needed I had a still image that was like explaining what I was talking about, and it was a very simple vector image. So I took that, I put it in Runway AI, and basically it just rotated like 10 degrees.
Okay.
And it just made it seem it's like it's just a little bit more impressive. It's like instead of having a static image on screen for 5 seconds, you now have something with a little bit more movement, a little bit more life to it.
Dude, I scrolled further down their page. They have a text to video option.
Oh, cool. Oh, so I did. Like, that must be new.
This one says a motorcycle parked on a street corner in front of a restaurant. And it's like a literally what that is. And it kind of like zooms out. Yeah. Dude, you could just make tons of B-roll footage.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Anytime you need like a little explainer or something like that, it's great for that stuff.
And is this one free? I got to save this. I'm going to start saving all of these different AI things in a folder.
Yeah.
You know what? But I really need to, though.
What I want to do is for.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing.
I want to find like one that's a really good suite. Like, you know how Adobe has Photoshop Lightroom? Yeah. I want to find somebody who has a good AI suite. I feel like OpenAI is close to that. And so is Google, but I'm not sure which is kind of the best one to go for there.
I feel like that may be Adobe eventually.
Yeah, Adobe's got some stuff, but that's not where their expertise is. Like, Adobe lags behind like OpenAI in terms of image generation and stuff like that. It's there, and it's nice that it's integrated right into the program. Don't get me wrong. Like, that's hugely beneficial, but it's not on the same level as OpenAI.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we could go on and on about this, because this is wildly interesting. But tonight...
Bring other people in?
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Oh, yeah. Tonight is the special night of the month where we are doing our live video hangout with our top tier patrons. So that's where we're going to be heading now. And you can get access to that if you're interested at patreon.com/offthecutpodcast. You can also get access to the after show and all the other awesome things that we got to offer for you if you want to support the show. And we want to give a huge shout out to our returning top tier patrons, Joe Welsh at Delaware Valley Workshop. Ooh, that was a mouthful. Goblin Spanker, Dan Armendariz, Corey Duvall, and Dadu.
Oh,
yeah. Well, should we head over there?
I think we should.
Mm-hmm. Everybody, thanks for listening. We will catch you next week, and we'll be back to our regular after show next week. And we're excited.
See you, everybody.
See ya.